Hello, hello. We welcome you today to Love is Spoken Queer, Gospel Topics, LGBTQ plus voices. I'm Dustin Larson.
And I'm Renee Hernandez.
And Renee, in full transparency to all our listeners out there, we are talking 2 days after we recorded our last episode because of pushing back stuff due to scheduling. But Renee, how have you been in the last 2 days? It was Friday we recorded, now it's Sunday. Any major life events happen between then and now? Or what do you have coming up this coming week?
Let's see. Only life update I have is that my personal phone has been giving me some issues. So I decided that I upgraded myself to the iPhone 13, which is coming in the mail this week. So woo! In case any of you are iPhone fans, that is an update from me to you. Besides that, I have a lot of assignments due. And then on Friday morning, I leave to Philadelphia because I have 3 races in Philly. I have a half marathon, 8-kilometer race, and a full marathon. So I'm really, really stoked for it.
All in the same weekend?
Yes. So I do on Saturday morning, I run the half marathon. In the afternoon, I run the 8K. And then the next day on Sunday, I run the full marathon.
Well, I guess that's not much different than doing like a Disney, like the Dopey Challenge exactly. Stuff. So that's just a Sunday in the park with George with you. Like you just kind of saunter on in. But yeah, no, that sounds like a lot of running for me. I might be getting the iPhone 13 as well as part of my birthday upgrade because I still have the iPhone 8 and it is on its last leg. Like when I got it, I apparently didn't go for more storage. I usually go for the middle storage. Like they've got like the 64 and then they've got like the one something and then they've got like the super expensive one. I usually go for the middle storage, but apparently I went for the lower storage and
sweetie, those are like not even the numbers anymore. Oh. Like, the lower is like 124 or something, and the 128, and then it's 256, and then it's 500 and something, and then you go up from that. Like the middle is no, that's cute. That's like the beginning now.
Yeah, no, and my phone is letting me know that you're running out of space, and I deleted all the unnecessary pictures and videos, and I still am running out of space because of the apps and the podcasts because I listen to a lot of stuff. No,
like it's like 99¢ just to like add 50 gigabytes of iCloud memory. Just put them on there.
I don't want to give them 99¢. I already paid a fortune for the stupid phone. I'm not giving 99. Right. I can get right. No, but it was like a lot of gifts and all that sort of stuff. It was a bunch of stuff that I didn't need on here. Like I have it backed up on an external drive, just like phone dump sort of thing. But yeah, it's like screenshots of stuff and like inspiration. It's stuff that didn't need to be on my phone. It was just a nice reminder to take it off. But yeah, so I don't have any personal developments that happened, but shortly after our recording on Friday, it was announced that the one, the only Britney Spears was released from her conservatorship. So she is a free woman. She can do whatever she wants now. Now, if you purchase anything from the official Britney Spears sort of company or listen to her music, that is all going to go directly to her now. It's not going to go to any of the conservatorship or conservatees because they are now in the process of transitioning all of that power back to Britney. The only kind of person that's staying on as the conservator of the finances is to help her set up a trust so that way they can start transferring all the money that was kept from her back into her trustee as a person. And that's the only sort of bit of the conservatorship that is still alive. And that's just so that way they can kind of tie up loose ends. But other than that, the judge ordered it to be terminated immediately. Her lawyer basically came in there and got things done. He insisted that someone stay on in order to kind of help her transition and get all of her money back. And then hopefully they'll start going in, looking into the dirty hands that were in her piggy bank. So hopefully people will be brought to justice, but there was huge celebrations. Everyone was super happy. She kind of stole the thunder from Taylor Swift and her Red album or whatever, her version. I don't know. I kept seeing a bunch of, I'm not a hardcore Taylor Swift fan, but I do know that she had her version of Red that came out and they had like the 10 minute or 14 minute or something.
I would say she stole the thunder because right now Taylor Swift's album is the most listened to and most quickly like reviewed album and song of all time for a female artist. So I don't think her thunder was stolen. I think she's fine.
But it was supposed to be Taylor's day, but Britney's like, nope, you only get half of this. And then she came out. And
have you not seen Taylor's song when she makes amends with Katy Perry? She doesn't mind sharing the spotlight. You're fine.
I don't. Britney,
As long as Brittany doesn't mind sharing her spotlight, Taylor's fine.
Well, Brittany will always eclipse anybody that comes after her. So she is in her diva stardom level. But anyway, so that's
well, if you know anything about eclipse, they come and they go and the sun always comes back.
But Brittany is forever. She has been in the game longer than anyone else besides Madonna, like that sort of thing. Or Cher.
It depends on what game we're talking about, because she hasn't been consistently in said game.
That's not her fault. That's not her fault though. Like
I'm not giving fault or credit to anyone. I'm just saying what's happened.
Leave Brittany alone. Leave her alone. The one
Taylor Swift here. I'm just trying to tell you both of them can share the love in the space. Nobody has to eclipse anyone else. You're the one trying to make her bigger than anyone else. I'm just trying to tell you equity exists among all women that identify as such. You don't have to split them up.
But anyway, she took the headlines on Friday. So, but then Taylor Swift took it back with her SNL appearance. So more power to her. Jake Gyllenhaal, I hope you're safe wherever you're at. Because apparently she raked him across the coals in the new All Too Well video and song. Apparently she dished some more tea about their relationship. And apparently it was a lot more dramatic than we all knew. But again, I don't know that part of Taylor as much as someone else. So if someone wants to fill me in, more power to you. But apparently... Well,
why don't we turn back to our topic at hand, though, and get back to this podcast, yeah?
Sure, yes. Let's return back to the topic at hand, which is our podcast, exactly what you just said. And you know what else we should return to in order to keep this conversation going?
I believe that would be the haiku of the day.
Yes, the haikulleluyah. And so we are going to be discussing Doctrine and Covenants chapters 133 through 134 through the queer perspective of Return. And Renee, I believe you went first last time, so I am going to go first, if that's all right.
Perfect. Yes, please do.
So here we go. My haikulleluyah through the queer perspective of Return. We must always strive to return civility to our ministry.
Ooh, look at you. I know where you're going already.
Yep. Yeah, and it's funny because we had a conversation before this recording started, and you had a lot of things to say about one particular chapter from a really unique perspective, and I had a lot of things to say, and then we both had not much to say on another part of the chapter, but we'll get into that a little bit later. So let me hear your haikulleluyah on Return.
My haikulleluyah on Return. And also, I do want to add to those listening that this was the first time that I used the word in just conversation to bring the Dustin back. Usually he does it, but this time, you know, I felt return was a good word to bring us back to center. So here's my haikulleluyah. Return to him that loveth you from start to eternity.
Okay, you kind of found a way to bring in last week's episode and as well with eternity. I like that. So, Renee, let's get right into it, too, because I'm not sure. This might be a shorter episode because it's kind of late when we're recording it. And I want to save all of my nice, good zen to go into this week because I feel like I'm finally caught up. But we might get into some touchy topics. So I don't know how long it's going to take. So let's get right into it. So, Renee, as a queer person of faith, when you first hear the word return, what first comes to mind?
Okay, that's actually kind of funny. It's funny that the word is return, because I feel like a lot of people, when they're thinking of queer individuals in the church, return is because we've left and they want us to return back to the faith. So I feel like as queer individuals, that's where we hear the word return the most. Return to, you know, what you knew and things like that. Not realizing that to return, you would hope that what you're returning to is not the same because you left it for a reason. Obviously, like on my end, I have not left the faith. I am still an active member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But I feel like, so when I think of the word turn, it means to come back. And when I think of it as a queer individual of faith within the church, that's what I think of, because I think of a lot of the language we use towards our brothers and sisters who've left the church and we want them to return. How about yourself, Dustin? What comes to your mind?
A little bit along the same lines. When I first hear it, I think of return, meaning that someone has left something. And so exactly like you said, queer people of faith, sometimes they have to take a little break from the faith and then they return when they feel like it's necessary or they feel comfortable too. And then exactly like you said, hopefully it's changed for the better or they've changed and they're able to find a better place for them. But then something else that I think of too is almost like a return in the sense of kind of recalculating or rerouting, that sort of thing, where we were on one path, not necessarily queer people of faith, but say the church as a whole, they were on one path and one sort of set of beliefs and doctrine. And throughout time and throughout influence and throughout change of their position, they kind of shifted how they sort of view certain individuals or how they sort of view themselves in society. And they kind of lose track of where they originally started. They started out as the oppressed, and now sometimes they can be seen as the oppressor. So it's up to us as queer people of faith and those found on the margin to help them return back to what they originally were founded on, like liberty, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all. Because I know the founding fathers, when they wrote that, they only had a very narrow margin of, or a narrow view of what that entailed at the time. It was basically white men with property or people. That was who life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness consisted of or was therefore. But now that we've grown as a society, that should be everyone, no matter your walk of life, no matter your race, no matter your experience. And the church needs to get back on board with supporting that, because when they, at back in the time when these chapters happened, they were the oppressed. So they were in a position where they had everything to gain and very little to lose. And now that position has switched, where they, in their eyes, feel like they have a lot to lose with little to gain by taking on those who find themselves on the margin. So before we get really into that, because that's sort of the 134 version of the 134 chapter is about kind of the church's relationship with the government, we can briefly talk about 133, which is basically all about the return of Christ and the second coming and everything that's going to lead up to it. And it's like the fire and the brimstone, and make sure that you run from Babylon to safety, and all the non-believers will be thrust into the fire, like that sort of thing. And it's super dramatic. And I think the reason why it was dramatic is it states in the manual that it was supposed to be the appendix to the Book of Commandments, which it started out with like this blazing glory, sort of like commentary from the Lord saying, this is how the church started, this is how it's going to move forward. And this was supposed to be like the end climax of everything that these commandments were leading up to. Like, this is why you're prepping for the second coming, you're prepping for the return of Christ, and this is what will happen if you aren't taking that preparation seriously. So that's kind of what I got from it. And I feel like there's a lot that you can get out of it, but mostly it's a lot of like the fire and brimstone and the kind of like the fear-based way of straightening up and flying right sort of thing, which I don't think is necessarily the best way to get people to do what you want them to do it out of fear. But sometimes there's a time and a place for it. And I think Christ just being completely transparent about what this means, signifying his return, kind of allows us to realize just how seriously we're supposed to take the commandments that led up to this point.
Honestly, I'm going to just agree with you, because that's exactly, the chapter itself felt a little bit overwhelming, and I'm glad I had the Come Follow Me manual to really like highlight the things that it, like, I think this is one of those chapters where I appreciated the titles, because I wouldn't have known what I'm supposed to be following in that section. And I love that it focused it on the second coming, how Doctrines and Covenants helps you prepare and understanding what the second coming is all about. So I really did. And your synopsis was that on. So I say we jump straight to 134.
Well, I do have one verse that jumped out at me, because there is all the fire, brimstone, and kind of like fear of God in you. But then there's little bits and nuggets and pieces that I really love, that he reassures us that it's not all bad. Like, if you are prepared, there's really nothing you should fear. It's really bringing fear into those that haven't prepared and refuse to prepare or have put off preparing. That's, I think, now thinking about what I just said, kind of that's where the fear comes from, is for those that reject and reject and reject. But then he said, for those that are prepared, there's nothing to worry. And one way that we can prepare is in Doctrine and Covenants 133, verse 6, it says, call your solemn assemblies and speak often one to another, and let every man call upon the name of the Lord. And I said, as a queer person of faith, it is my sacred duty to return again and again to the well-being of my community to ensure that all are well, and to know I can call upon the name of the Lord for when they are not. So I kind of saw returning that way is constantly returning back to the members of our community. Like, we can progress forward, but we should always continue to return back to see if there's anybody that we've left behind. Do we have any of our trans siblings that we've left behind? Are there any people of color that we've left behind? Are there any gender minorities that we've left behind? And we need to constantly kind of check on them to see how they're doing and return back to them to make sure that we all are progressing forward. And I think that's what he's saying in that one verse, is continue to make sure that no one gets left behind that has the drive to prepare for the return of Christ and the second coming. Because if you let one of your siblings fall backwards, it's kind of on you as well, because you aren't looking out for your fellow being that should be progressing as well. So I think that's one of the little nuggets that I got out of 133 that wasn't all fire and brimstone, is to remember in your preparations, you need to constantly return to those that might not be in the same privilege you are and help them progress forward. Otherwise, it's on you, because that's part of being Christ-like, is to always keep the people in your community at the forefront of your mind to make sure that they're able to progress as well.
I want to say that, like, in full, like, transparency, what you said, it's the idea of creating the space for those individuals to be able to grow with you, not necessarily that you are in charge or responsible for their individual choices, considering that salvation, it's an individual thing, but leaving the space and the venue, the environment, the culture open for them to explore and grow in those choices. I think that's where is vital.
Yeah, exactly. Like, again, everybody has their own agency and everybody has their own ability to develop and create their own opportunity for salvation. But yeah, no, when I was saying turn around and return, is to make sure if there's anything that you can do to create a space, especially if you come from a place of privilege, it's your duty to make sure that space is available. Yeah. So thank you for clarifying that. Now we can move on to 134, which is all about the government. So, Renee, do you have any initial thoughts on this chapter? You had a very unique perspective coming at it before we started recording. So I'm curious to see you share that with the listeners.
So I would love to read just like the little header, the little section markers, just to give a quick overview of what all these sections are about. 1-4 of section 134, verses 1-4, talk about the government should preserve freedom of conscience and worship. 5-8 talk about all men should uphold their governments and one respect and deference to the law. And deference. 9-10 is religious society should not exercise civil powers. And 11-12, men are justified in defending themselves and their property. I found this chapter is really interesting because there's a lot of conversations going around police reform, right? Some people believe it should be abolished. Other people believe it should be reformed and defunded. So it really depends. And other people say you should leave them alone. They're great how they are. There's nothing bad about them. Obviously, where you fall on it, it's up to you. I do have my own opinions on it. But the part that I found fascinating here is that the church in this verse, or the Doctrines and Covenants, basically says that we are in support of the police. And I just, in reflection of it, I was thinking about the histories that we know about the origins of police. And in the origins of police, it basically says that when slaves would run away, there were individuals that would be hired to chase after them to bring them back to their slave owners. And in that way, that eventually when there were no more slaves to be had, those individuals became what were known as police. So the history of police has always been kind of like very layered, if you will. But again, they don't use the word police here. They use the word civil officer. And I'm not sure if I'm reading this wrong, but it basically says requires civil officers. And this is verse 3. We believe that all governments necessarily require civil officers and magistrates to enforce the laws of the same, and that such as will administer the law and equity and justice should be sought for and upheld by the voice of the people, if a republic or the will of the sovereign. And when you click on civil officers, I don't know if you had the chance to do this yourself, and it basically just highlights wherefore honest men and wise men should be sought for diligently, and good men and wise men you should observe to uphold. Otherwise, whatsoever is less than these cometh of evil. And in my mind, I'm like, well, from everything we've learned from police officers, there have been individuals found that meet this criteria. They're diligent, good man, wise man, but there's a lot of others that wouldn't qualify into that. And so I found that very interesting that if you were to bring it into that dialogue, the church supports police, but within a certain form of worthy men being in that role. And my question is, are there currently those worthy men in those roles? And should this church be supporting it? Or is that, as you said, is that a role the church should be even getting itself involved with, which then plays into what you were sharing about the church should be better at following its own doctrine and covenant, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And for those out there that are not as informed as Renee is on the origins of the police within the United States, there's an amazing documentary on Netflix called The 13th, which is all about, I believe, the 13th, or it's just called 13th. And it's about the 13th Amendment, which kind of creates the loophole of slavery is no more, but how you could make legalized slavery. And I think that that's a very poor kind of summary of it, but I really highly suggest it because I learned a lot for it. It really breaks down for-profit prisons and how there's no place for those because we are the only nation in the world that has for-profit prisons, and it causes a lot of problems all the way from teen prisoners or child prisoners all the way up through people who are there through their death that don't need to be for minor infractions, that sort of thing. But that's a whole nother topic. But kind of to comment on the things that you're saying, it from reading through the doc or this portion of the Doctrine and Covenants, it sounds like the church is in full support of any sort of government or civil entity that the main purpose is to protect the civil liberties of all. So if there are individuals within the police department that are not protecting the civil liberties of all, there does need to be some form of reform. And I don't think that there's a question of should there be or shouldn't there be. Obviously, it's not, something's not working because enough turmoil have come from it that something needs to change. Obviously, we can't turn a blind eye to it anymore. And I think us as members of the church, and especially queer members of the church, because we live in the discriminated sort of sector that society puts us in. And sometimes people of color or trans people of color, the highest victims of police brutality. So the church needs to basically practice what it preaches, especially what it says in these chapters is basically they're saying, this is what we believe as far as being a church entity. We believe that upholding the laws of the land and upholding the lawmakers of the land, as long as they are upholding the civil liberties of everyone, and they say all, like they don't have any sort of conditions. They don't say of the white man, though that's probably what they meant back then. Well, the government. There was a lot of church people that were abolitionists, so I can't say that everyone back then thought that it was just white men that should be free, because I know Joseph Smith was big on anti-slavery. But again, yes, what I was saying with you before is there's a lot of verses within 143 or 134. I flipped that 134 that if the church were practicing what they were preaching back here now, a lot of the civil rights questions wouldn't even be a question, especially when it comes to queer people and queer people of faith. And one that really jumped out at me is Doctrine and Covenants 134, verse 2. It says, we believe that no government can exist in peace except such laws are framed and held inviolate as will secure to each individual the free exercise of conscience, the right and control of property, and the protection of life. So basically, that's just saying that the church is all for a government that supports freedom of religion, as well as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's basically what that one kind of breaks it down to. There's a few that really blew my mind, but this one in particular, it says, we believe, oh, this is verse 4 in chapter 134. It says, we believe that religion is instituted of God and that men are amendable to him and to him only for the exercise of it, unless their religious opinions prompt them to infringe upon the rights and liberties of others. And I said, as a queer person of faith, it is my sacred duty to remind those around me to return to Christ-like love when they forget what that truly means. It's also my duty to help return the church back to its early beliefs that are rooted in both civil and spiritual responsibility. And one of the major things that kind of popped up in my mind after reading verse 4, when it says infringe upon the rights and liberties of others, is within our most recent church history. More than kind of 10 years ago. So like 2008, Prop 8 happened. And I'll post some links about exactly what Prop 8 was. But basically what it was is there is a law passed that marriage between a man and a woman was the only marriage there was. And then shortly after that, there was something else passed that then granted same-sex marriage as legal. And it came shortly after Massachusetts passed marriage equality. So then California is like, we're supposed to be the progressive state. We need to get on the right side of history. So they're like, let's make marriage equality legal. And that was like in March of 2008 or May of 2008. By November of 2008, Prop 8 was presented to the people of California on the ballot. And that was basically making it illegal to have same-sex marriages, but keeping the marriages that had happened between May and November, those were still legal. But anything after the passing of Proposition 8 would be unrecognizable. Like same-sex marriage would not be recognizable in the state of California, which is dumb. It's super dumb because you can't give marriage equality and then turn around and take it back. But that's exactly what happened. And one of the major players in passing Proposition 8 was the church. They put a lot of time, they put a lot of money, and they put a lot of people into making it pass. And I've always been kind of, so this was, again, I mentioned this on the podcast before, this was kind of when I was beginning my Jimmy journey. So I was kind of in and out of the goings on of the church, and it wasn't really affecting me at the time, which I think is pretty beneficial to me because I don't have that hurt, and I'm going back and learning about that hurt now that it made to other people. So that way I can see at it from a different eye. So I feel like I was kind of protected by being out of the church at that period of time. But going back, it just doesn't seem right to me because I even Googled Proposition 8 LDS Church, and it took me right to the church newsroom, and it took me right to the letter that was sent by the First Presidency to all of the church leadership of California. And it seemed like the church was crossing the line. Like they were basically saying, do everything you can to call your family, your friends, your loved ones in California and say, marriage is only between a man and a woman. And I'm like, that is completely violating or going against this one verse about like, you shouldn't use your religious opinions to prompt or infringe on the rights of liberties of others. And that's exactly what they were doing. And I think the church really tries to downplay their role in it because of one, they lost, like eventually down the road after a few years of litigation within the courts and the Supreme Courts, it was basically ruled as unconstitutional. And then now in June 2015, marriage equality was passed throughout the rest of the land. So it kind of left the church with egg on their face. And so I think they kind of downplay their role when really they should own up to it and be like, you know what? We were bad. This was almost as bad as some of like the past church history sort of thing. And if they owned up to it, then it'd be easier for members who were hurt by it to kind of forgive them. And it would also keep them from repeating that same sort of persecution, especially with the Equality Act. So the Equality Act is basically going to the Civil Rights Act. I think it was 1964, one of those civil rights acts where basically it's saying you couldn't discriminate on the basis of race, religion, all those sort of things. And they have sex on there. And they want to expand that to include sexual orientation and gender expression or identity. And a lot of religious institutions are like, no, because they want that loophole of religious freedom to allow them to continue practicing their religion of discrimination towards individuals if they don't feel like it fits within their spiritual beliefs, which I think is a bunch of whatever, a bunch of pooey, because it basically, again, goes against everything that the church should be standing for. Because back in the day, and I know this was kind of their political move to get on good graces with some of the governments at the time so they can try and get their properties back from Jackson County, Missouri, but then also get on good terms moving forward in the progression of the church. So that way the government entities wouldn't come after them. So it's all politics sort of thing. But if the church really stands behind this, which I think they do, at least God wants them to stand behind it, it would let them see that persecuting someone for their authentic self is not what Christ would want at all. And I think it's something that we really need to return back to. We need to return back to our roots of being civil members of society, as well as spiritual ministers, and let them know that this is what Christ really wants. He wants us all to be equal. He wants us all to have the same rights and protections, especially the most vulnerable or the most found on the margins. Like when Christ was on the earth, he was with the robbers and the lepers and the sex workers and all the people that were found on the margins. And he wanted to minister to them to most because they had the least. So if he was back here in this day and age, he'd be doing the exact same thing. He'd be trying to advocate for the trans individuals. He'd be trying to advocate for the people of color. He'd be trying to advocate for the low-income families, the people who don't have health insurance, like all these people that have nothing. He wants them to be spiritually fulfilled and eventually come back and live with him because they weren't given the privilege of everything else. And I think the church needs to return back to their founding and what Joseph Smith was really trying to go for in order to make us the true church. Like, I believe we are the true church. We do have most of the true doctrine that it needs to live on this earth. But at the same time, we're kind of losing our way a little bit. And I think we need to be, as queer people of faith, we need to remind those in a place of privilege to return back to what we were when we were the oppressed. And I think I'm really glad that this, the Book of Mormon, Come Follow Me, and the Doctrine and Covenants, Come Follow Me, is happening in a time of such social unrest, because I think it's bringing a magnifying glass on the things that we really need to improve on.
If I may add, like, I don't know much about Prop 8 or how the full involvement of the church was in it. I think in 2008 was when I was joining the church for myself. So I didn't have a lot of context or involvement with the church except for investigating the basics of it, right? Like the easy pieces of it, that just to build my own testimony. So I didn't, and I, like I said, I joined the church at first more for the fellowship than I did the organization itself. And so that is a conversation that I was never really a part of. I just remember hearing about it. But I really appreciated you sharing the insights of that, because I do agree. I think Doctrines and Covenants 134 does a really good job of holding us to a standard that really is beautifully laid out here that we can apply now. I think in all scripture, we always are taught, hey, this stuff, yes, it happened in the past, like the Book of Mormon. This is like, obviously, this is not us living this, but there's so much we can learn that we can take and apply to our lives now, right? Would you agree, Dustin, that a lot of how we're taught to learn is that way?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say it'd be beautifully if we actually applied a lot of that to this section, because I really do think it plays a really big role in this day and age, right? Like you shared verse 4 in section 134, and I would love to share section 9, because I feel like it does a really beautiful thing of catching privilege that exists, whether you're looking at a heteronormative world or you're looking at a white world, like, you know, a white supremacist kind of mentality of privilege. But it says, verse 9 says, we do not believe it just to mingle religious influence with civil government, whereby one religious society is fostered and another prescribed in its spiritual privileges and the individual rights of its members as citizens denied. Basically saying we don't believe of one religion being put above another, basically, right?
The privilege or any sort of demographic being put above another.
So that's not what this says, though. This just says religious society. So this verse itself is very focused on the religious aspect of privilege. Like, it doesn't generalize.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yep.
My belief, though, is what you just said. I believe that if we as members really took this verse to really take on the nuance of what it's saying, we can extend it to the privileges of other groups, right? And say that none of us should be put up above it. I personally do believe that the church is making progress in directions like this very slowly, but our members aren't always making it just as fast because they get ingrained in what the church was teaching, not necessarily how it's growing. And I think we ourselves also must take it upon ourselves, just like you and I are currently doing with this section, to be able to reflect and really take the important nuggets, like this idea of privilege, and extend it beyond just the religious context and said, you know what? I wonder what privileges do I have? I know what privileges I have as a white presenting Latino. I know the privileges that I have as like an academic who's been granted, I'm literally pursuing a PhD. That in itself is a privilege of academic knowledge and wealth and whatnot. And so it allows me the opportunity to really grow in that way. And as a queer individual, it really also gives me a sense like, what privileges do I have that my other queer brothers and sisters didn't have, right? And I think that's what I got from verse 9, where I took it beyond just the religious privilege. And I think this section if people really did do that, it would take them into really beautiful ways of thinking and expanding their own way from a scripture that is already part of our beliefs and our canon, you know?
Yes, thank you for sharing that, because I think a lot of the members of the church, they have such a strong patriotism. And sometimes that patriotism gets confused with nationalism. And I heard this really great sort of comparison of patriotism to nationalism, where patriotism is your love of country and your want for it to progress and become the best that it can be. Nationalism is your belief that your country is the best as is, and it doesn't need to do anything to progress any further. And I think...
Hashtag make America great again.
So that's what it was. And I think if we can get back to our roots of real patriotism, which means the fighting for the rights and liberties for all and progressing so that way our country can do that, patriotism is an amazing thing, because that allows us to continue to progress and grow, and allows us to not leave anybody behind. We need to untangle it from nationalism and really distance ourselves from it, because the church is starting to become intertwined with white nationalism and white supremacy and that sort of thing, which is not what the church is about anymore. Like, it could have been at one time because we were an American-born church, but now that it's a global church, there's no place for white supremacy or white nationalism within any of its sort of corners. And so we just need to really be careful on becoming intertwined with that. And one way we can do that is to further educate ourselves on the issues at hand, and not just say, I'm a member of the church, conservative sort of ideals align with the teachings of the church, so that way I'm always going to vote Republican. Same thing with Democrats. Just because if you're a very liberal doesn't mean you always have to vote Democrat. You really need to constantly educate yourself and really choose the best person for the role, and not necessarily always have to vote party lines. And I know the church also teaches that as well. Like, they don't always force the members to vote along Republican conservative ideals. They want us to choose for ourselves, because in these doctrines that they have here, is they want a nation and they want a government, and for every nation, because they said other sort of foreign sovereignties and that sort of thing, they should all be for the betterment of the people, for all the people. They should make sure that everyone has the same liberties. And there's one individual that they were talking about in the Revelations and context, and I can't remember his first name because I only wrote his last name, but his last name's White, W-I-G-H-T. And he apparently, I think his father fought in the Revolutionary War, and then he fought in the War of 1812. I could have gotten that wrong or whatever. But anyway, so this individual, he basically had a crisis of faith because he loved the church and he loved his country. But at the time, the country was persecuting him based on his faith. And he's just like, this isn't the country that I fought for. This isn't the country that my dad fought for. And he was very discouraged. And then it went on to say that he wrote this petition saying that if I have to live in a country that makes me choose between being proud of my country and being a man of faith, I don't want to live in that kind of country. So he kind of left the state that he was in. And this is the petition that he's talking about. They said, White's petition epitomized one of the primary principles of the Declaration of Government and Law, that church members owe allegiance to their country, but simultaneously work to build governments that secure the liberty and rights of all citizens. And the reason why I want to go so hard in on this is because Prop 8 is a huge kind of red flag of what the church is capable of doing. And we need to make sure that that doesn't repeat. And so again, we have the Equality Act that I believe it passed the Senate, and now it needs to be passed the House of Representatives in order to go to the president's desk to sign into law. And that still is on the table. Like, it passed the Senate and it's still not fully into law yet. And we have opposition from the church to the Equality Act on the sole basis of religious freedom. And I think we need to really do a deep dive, look within ourselves and realize, is this religious freedom that we're hiding behind really what God wants us to do, and really what the foundation of the church wants us to do? And I don't know if you saw this news article that was kind of going about around that had to do with what does your faith exempt you from? And it's mainly speaking about vaccines and how people are using like their religious freedom to get them away from vaccines. It's this pastor who wrote this really great I think, opinion piece. I'm not sure what newspaper it was in, but I saw so many people sharing it when the anti-vaccine sort of propaganda was going around. And I just want to read it really fast because it really kind of brings into focus exactly why are you claiming religious freedom? Are you doing it for selfish personal reasons, or do you really follow in the footsteps of the deity that you're supposedly supporting? And it says, "Religious exemption is a term I have heard more in the past 3 months than the rest of my life combined. Recently, I was asked if Christians should be able to claim religious exemption when public health is in jeopardy. Their question made me ask myself, what does my faith in Jesus Christ exempt me from? Below is a partial list of what came to mind. My faith in Jesus Christ exempts me from putting my wants above the needs of others. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others." And that's Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4. And then he goes on to say, "Claiming my freedom in Christ as liberty to act without responsibility. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love, for the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this one command: love your neighbor as yourself." And that's Galatians 5, verses 13 and 14. And then he says, "Refusing to protect the most vulnerable in our midst. Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me." Matthew 25, verse 40. "Therefore, my religious exception requires I receive the COVID vaccination or vote in favor of the vulnerable or those on the margin to make sure they have the rights as everyone else." I added that last part. "To safeguard life and wear a mask to care for my neighbor. Claiming the Christian faith is no justification to refuse these measures. By invoking the name of Jesus to claim exemption, you are using the Lord's name in vain and therefore sinning. Now you may have your own political or personal reasons not to do so, but please stop claiming your faith in Jesus Christ as justification." And I think that's a really great reminder that also if you are using Jesus's name to persecute someone on the basis of sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, that in a way is using the Lord's name in vain, because that is not what Christ wants. He wants us all to be equal, treated equal with the same equal rights. And so I just want that to be a reminder to everybody out there that I really hope that you use these chapters 133 and 134 to remind yourself of the preparation that needs to happen in order for us to be true disciples of Christ. And that's really making sure that all of those among us are taken care of, and that we are not leaving any of the individuals behind if we are coming from a place of privilege. And I just want to remind people out there that we as a church have a huge responsibility and a huge spotlight. We can be progressive and we can be the pioneers that we were before in accepting everyone for who they are, because that is what Christ truly wants us to do. And to realize that we're not sacrificing a lot to gain a little. We're sacrificing a little to gain a lot again, like we were back in the days of our oppression.
Can I say too, like, some of my final words, I feel like, for this week's this podcast, it's just like, a lot of what Dustin has said, the beauty of everything we've talked about is that these are all examples, guidance, dialogue that is happening that you should take into your own reflection, your own thoughts, to make your choices. There is no judgment in what choice you're making, whether you're choosing not to be vaccinated or vaccinated, but you are making a call. And just know that the call you're making may have implications that go beyond just the things here. They could have eternal and significant impacts for you in the future. And there's a lot of beautiful scripture, medical evidence for a lot of things in our world that sometimes we argue with. So just throwing out that we're not trying to like say do one thing or the other, but to take all this and really apply it into your own life and expand the way you think and the way you see the world. And you'll see how much you don't just welcome the queer community, but the viewpoints of many others.
Yes, thank you for sharing that. All I have to say is amen, because again, this is another long-winded episode where I thought it would be a short one, but we got some really great discussion in today. And so I think right now is a great time to take a short break. Every voice, make a choice. And welcome back from the break. You're listening to Love is Spoken Queer, and Renee and I have just finished discussing Doctrine and Covenants chapters 133 through 134 through the queer perspective of return. And Renee, I went on another one of my soapbox rants. So based on our discussion today, what do you feel called to do?
One thing that I love about the podcast is that we get the opportunity to review the sections before they're taught in Sunday school. So I am looking forward to being able to see how this dialogue is playing out with the members. So I'm going to be going in with an open heart, keeping an open heart and open mind, because I want to hear what my brothers and sisters are. Excuse me. I'm trying not to be gender binary, but like those in my congregation feel about this chapter, because I'll be really curious and to share my own thoughts, of course.
Thank you for sharing that. I feel called to give an assignment to the listeners and you out there as well. Is I just finished watching the new documentary, Mayor Pete, about Pete Buttigieg and his kind of campaign trail to become president. And it's actually a pretty decent documentary. Like, I learned a lot about him that I didn't know before. And they shed a lot of light on what it is to be a queer candidate for president. And it shows Chasen, his husband, in there, which I realized I'm a lot like. So if there's any Petes out there that would like me to be their Chasen, I'm available. But anyways, it's another glimpse into the life of what do I have to suppress in order to get ahead, and what happens when I live as my authentic self, and the people that encourage you to do one or the other. And I'm going to let people out there watch it to kind of get their sort of their take on it. But the reviews have been kind of mixed, but I thought it was really great. And there are a few really tender moments that I think will be really beneficial to people out there that are trying to figure out exactly what their thought and their stances on some of these topics. And it also kind of shows what not to do when using kind of God's word as a weapon. There's some protesters. So it kind of shows you what not to do when you're quote unquote speaking for Jesus or the Lord, because these people who are doing it are actually taking the Lord's name in vain, because I don't see what they're trying to gain out of persecuting this candidate other than they don't agree with his policies or his lifestyle, quote unquote lifestyle. But again, I challenge the listeners to kind of give it a go. It's on Amazon Prime. So if you have Amazon Prime, it's one of the free sort of videos that you can watch. And I'm going to go back and watch it again, because I was watching it and then I was kind of half watching it as I was doing something else. But again, it really let me see into the life of this person that has so many complex things going for him that I can kind of relate to, because he's trying to be this person for change, but at the same time, he's just another white man coming from privilege. And so he also has to come up against that as well, as how can he create change, but at the same time use his privilege for good, and then also bring other people to the table that don't have as much privilege, like that sort of thing. Like, there's some complex things that they don't really go into, but I think it's a really great glimpse into the life of this individual who did a lot for the LGBTQ community, and I hope will continue to do so. And listeners out there, if you'd like to contribute any of your thoughts on today's episode, feel free to send them in to lovespokenqueer@gmail.com, or you can find us on social, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. You can send us a direct message. So I guess the only thing we have left to do is thank our listeners for listening, and remember to always be true to you.
And love one another.
Until next time, bye.
Ciao.
You've just listened to another episode of Love is Spoken Queer. If you want to join in on the conversation, feel free to send us an email at our Gmail account, which is lovespokenqueer@gmail.com, or send us a direct message on our social channels. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you really love our episodes and our show, make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. That is the fastest way for us to share our words with everyone out there. So again, thank you for listening.